We've been going through the book of Ecclesiastes. Now, anyone who is living life is trying to find fulfillment, and we're trying to find the purpose of why it is that we are living. But in order to figure out this purpose, mankind needs to have some questions answered, without a doubt. God preserved an account of someone doing that very thing. But not only is he seeking answers, but he's putting everything that he has into finding this fulfillment that his soul and his heart desires. In the book of Ecclesiastes, for those who were not with us last week, we're looking at a lesson given by a preacher to an assembly. And that it seems towards the end of this man's life, he is giving the things that he's learned and he's sharing different life experiences. And as we notice towards the beginning of this book, it starts off quite depressing. He says, "Vanity of vanities, all is vanity," is what the preacher said. And we've been going through the different reasons why he made that statement. So far, we have seen some of the things that Solomon, who is the king of David, or king of Israel, the son of David, we've been going through some of the things that he has said to us and that he has concluded. And he says, or he explained that both nature and humanity are trapped in this endless cycle, is what we looked at initially. That throughout history, we see that history repeats itself and that humanity is stuck in this vicious cycle that we cannot pull ourselves out of. And when we look at things like nature, we see that the sun rises and the sun sets and the water flows into the ocean and it continues in that direction and it keeps going in this cycle as though it has no end. But next, we saw that man in and of itself has problems. Mankind has issues that we ourselves cannot fix. That things are crooked and we do not have the power to straighten them, is what he says in chapter 1 and verse 15. What is crooked cannot be straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted. That we need some other form of wisdom, that we need guidance in our lives as Solomon, the king of Israel, tries to put together a nation with a multitude of issues. He realizes that within himself he cannot solve all the problems of mankind, as we see happening so frequently today. Well, last week we discussed the fact that pleasure and self-indulgence brings about no lasting fulfillment. That in and of itself, it's vanity. That sometimes we get caught up in our lives trying to seek after the next form of pleasure, whether it be a party or whether it be some sort of substance that brings about this sensation that man strives after, man and women alike. But that all of it eventually comes to an end. That when we seek after possessions and we seek after pleasure, eventually we're going to have to find more. In order to maintain that state of fulfillment, it's a never-ending process of seeking after more. Therefore, at the end of all things, it is vanity, is what the preacher concludes. Our subject this morning is a subject that is often tied with Solomon himself, and that is wisdom. When we look in 1 Kings chapter 3, Solomon has taken the place of his father David. But at this point in time in his life, he is but a youth. But we see in chapter 3 and verse 9, it says, Solomon asks the Lord for wisdom and says, "Give your servant therefore an understanding mind to govern your people, that I may discern between good and evil, for who is able to govern your great people?" Solomon, in his youth and recognizing his insufficiency and recognizing his inability to handle this task on his own, he asked the Lord for wisdom. And if you keep going on in the text in 1 Kings chapter 3, you see that God is pleased with this request of Solomon. That God is pleased to give his assistants, and it says in chapter 3 and verse 12, "Behold, I now do according to your word. Behold, I give you a wise and discerning mind, so that none like you has been before you, and none like you shall arise after you." We understand that this wisdom that Solomon speaks of is talking about discernment. But when we're looking at the book of Ecclesiastes, we're not looking at godly wisdom. We're not looking at the discernment between good and evil. We're looking at this wisdom from a very worldly perspective, and it seems as though Solomon spent a great deal of time pursuing this route to seek after a worldly wisdom that we're going to discuss this morning. The world recognizes secular individuals as wise, and Solomon certainly pursues this route, but he ultimately will conclude that walking in worldly wisdom is vanity, as he's repeated so far throughout the book. We're coming to the next section that Solomon is going to address in his search for wisdom and his quest for wisdom. But first, we're going to see that wisdom is vanity because wisdom cannot answer everything. Worldly wisdom cannot answer everything. Solomon starts in verse 12 in chapter 2 of Ecclesiastes. He starts with a phrase that we've already seen before. Back in chapter 1 and verse 17, Solomon says, "And I applied my heart to know wisdom, and to know madness and folly." And again he states in chapter 2 and verse 12, "So I turned to consider wisdom, madness, and folly." He is going to consider the relationship between these three different terms. And he mentions wisdom. And when we look at the definition of this term, something he's already mentioned and will continue to mention throughout Ecclesiastes, it means to have this skill in living. That you are wise in understanding the different things that are expected of you out of life, and that you know how to perform certain tasks in life. Understanding the Jewish mindset is very concrete. Not straying from the abstract, it's something that's very applicable and very, very noticeable by the human eye. That a wise individual knows the different tasks of life and knows how to perform these tasks. Then he uses this term that he refers to as madness. Something that is somewhat the exact opposite of this term of wisdom. Someone that walks in a manner that is foolish is this next concept that he's going to introduce. But this idea is one who has foolish behavior. And he again mentioned this word folly. Again, reiterating or reemphasizing the idea of someone who has a lack of understanding. Someone that does not know the things of life and the things that are required by us in our daily living. But he is going to relate these concepts to his accomplishments as the king. If you can remember back to last week, we talked a lot about his possessions. We talked about all the things that Solomon throughout his kingship has acquired and all the things he has accomplished as king. And from a worldly perspective, he is doing quite well. And we know that Solomon, again, is often associated with his possessions and his accomplishments and his way, but he's going to address this in relationship to his wisdom. He continues on to say in verse 12, "For what will the man do who will come after the king except what has already been done?" He mentions his successor, the one who is to come after him. What will this man do? What will come of this man? We can ask a multitude of questions in relationship to what Solomon mentions. What are they going to accomplish that he hasn't? If what he has accumulated himself, Solomon and all of his glory and all of his possessions, If that wasn't enough, what are we to say for the next guy? What are we to say for the man who is to follow, who will not reach the heights that Solomon has reached? What are we going to say for him? What is he going to accomplish that Solomon hasn't already accomplished? What is going to make him stand out in an everlasting way? But most importantly, viewing from a worldly perspective, what is going to come of all the accomplishments of Solomon when the next guy comes in? How is he going to handle his possessions and all the things that he has acquired? He's going to address in the passage that is to follow, that we're going to discuss more thoroughly next week, that the legacy of an individual is strongly dependent upon those who follow, those who come after. If those who follow are foolish with an individual's possessions, then all is lost. But we're going to discuss that more next week. But he introduces this idea of the person who is going to succeed him. When evaluating what is to come after or come of his successor, he finds that wisdom is better than folly, relatively speaking. Continuing in verse 13, it says, "Then I saw that there is more gain in wisdom than in folly, as there is more gain in light than in darkness." So there, even though there is this little bit of satisfaction, this little bit of gain that comes with wisdom, it only goes so far. Relatively speaking, when we consider the fool and the wise individual, there is a benefit of being wise, but it only goes so far. Think about everything that man has answered by himself. Every question that man has attempted to answer by himself. Men and women have striven and spent their entire lives striving after answers to questions. But think about things like the origin of the universe. Think about things pertaining to medicine. Think about things that men and women continually try to answer. However, when we consider wisdom and all the things acquired by mankind and all the things learned by mankind, we see something that ultimately is never fulfilled. Learning is a continual process. Whenever mankind has drawn this conclusion, there is always a follow-up question that takes their conclusion a step further. There is always more to be learned. There is always more to be acquired. And again, this never-ending cycle. And he says, seeking after wisdom has this satisfaction, but it's not one that is everlasting. It is not one that answers everything. Wisdom is vanity because it does not answer everything, but the next point supports this statement as well. But second, we're going to look at the fact that wisdom is vanity because both the foolish and the wise have the same outcome. This is where we see the worldly wisdom that he's been discussing emphasized. If you look in chapter 2 and verse 14, it says that the wise man's eyes are in his head, meaning he can see clearly, but the fool walks in darkness. And yet I know that one fate befalls them both. There is a certain degree of value in wisdom when compared to the fool, but they both end up in the same place. When we consider the different people that the world would find wise, or they would call wise, we see that they achieve certain things, but we recognize different individuals who have persuaded mankind to go in a specific direction because of their worldly or so-called wisdom. There is someone that is referred to as Buddha, who influenced one of the biggest religions in the world today and still is. When we look at this individual, he taught this philosophy that refers to the middle way. Basically, Buddha was a man who was rich and he was wealthy and he was going to ultimately, according to some scholars, become a king in the region in which he lived. And he realized that ultimately all these things that he had, all of his great possessions that he had, were not enough to live a fulfilling life and to get the most out of life. So he decided to get rid of all of those things. And he made himself so poor that he almost killed himself. He almost starved to death. And he realized, okay, since all of my riches and becoming the king is not going to get me the most out of the life and make me happy, and being so poor that I can't even sustain my own life is not going to make me happy, We ought to walk the middle way. And he developed this philosophy that gained followers after followers after followers. But according to historians, Buddha himself was, in fact, an atheist, which is ironic when we consider the majority of his followers today. But he didn't believe in an afterlife. He didn't believe in any superior being or the supernatural, but he developed this philosophy that if you want to get the most out of life, you ought to walk the middle way. And because of that, still today, the majority or a good portion of the world considers this individual to be wise. But when we think about Buddha, what does he have now that the fool doesn't? What has he gained now, or how does it affect him now? That is different than someone who never put a thought into wisdom, who never decided to learn anything. What has come of him now? He lived hundreds of years before the existence of Christ in the flesh. If he had lived his life a complete fool, even by worldly standards, what difference would there be now for him? Solomon continues to elaborate on this conclusion. If you look in verse 15, Ecclesiastes chapter 2 and verse 15 says, "Then I said in my heart, what happens to the fool will happen to me also. What then have I been so very wise? And I said in my heart that this is also vanity." This is something that Solomon has put so much effort into. When he asked the question, what then, or why then have I been so very wise? Why have I put so much energy and time into seeking worldly wisdom if my eventual or my ultimate outcome is going to be the same as the fool, the same as the individual who never put forth that energy, who never strove, who put their inner being into seeking something greater? What makes a fool is the fact that they are not teachable. Well, we see this concept in other places in Scripture. In Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 23, it says, "Doing wrong is like a joke to a fool, but wisdom is pleasure to a man of understanding." Later on in chapter 18 and verse 2, he says, "A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion." This idea of the fool is one who is unwilling to learn, is one that is unwilling to understand the concepts of life, the things that are required of daily living, but they are unteachable. They don't care about wisdom. They don't care about the things that make life greater. All they care about is their own thoughts and the things that they can accumulate themselves. But what is the difference between Solomon's outcome as a wise individual, one who put effort into wisdom, and the foolish individual? He finally realized, what is the point? There are some, even today, who spend their entire lives seeking after degrees and seeking after knowledge, seeking after worldly wisdom. Spend time after time in an all-consuming process where the more, or maybe the more degrees I attain, the more classes I take, the more wise I'll become, and the better at life I'll become. But to what end? There will always be more to learn, and life will never, on this earth, allow us to learn all the things that we might want to attain. And he says, eventually, the foolish person and the wise have the same outcome. But he says that neither one is going to be remembered. If you continue in chapter 2 and verse 16, it says, "For there is no lasting remembrance of the wise man as with the fool, inasmuch as in the coming days will all be forgotten, how the wise man and the fool alike die." This refers back to that generation concept that we've been discussing really throughout these different sections. That a generation comes and a generation goes, and the generation that exists in the present forgets about the previous generation, and that there are names who existed who will no longer be remembered again, whose names will never be mentioned again, whose wisdom will never be mentioned again. All alike die is what Solomon says. This is what is to come of all of his efforts. When we think about the greatest achievement of an atheist, it is to become remembered in some way, shape, or form. Eventually, we understand that because of what the New Testament teaches, that this earth is going to perish, and that those who are left behind or who are do not have a relationship with God ultimately will be forgotten. That one day those who do not have a relationship with God will perish. When we separate our lives from God, when we think about trying to pursue fulfillment without God in the picture, all is vanity. When it comes to our wisdom, when it comes to our pleasure, when it comes to correcting the things that we see that are wrong, all is vanity because there is no everlasting fulfillment. Earthly wisdom is better than nothing, relatively speaking, but it only goes so far. Wisdom is vanity because it does not answer everything. Wisdom is vanity because it has the same outcome as the fool. But with God in the picture, all of that changes. God provides the wisdom that is necessary in order to maintain a fulfilling life. Not just for the now, not just for the life that we are all currently living, but for something far greater and something that is everlasting. God is the one who has wisdom. When we see the good things that Solomon did, God provided Solomon the wisdom that was necessary in order to discern the difference between good and evil. And when we see God's ultimate purpose with that discernment, it is something that is far greater than we can ever accomplish. With possessions, with wisdom, with whatever we might think of. Our wisdom is insufficient. And Solomon, in this part of his life, is finally realizing this. That his worldly wisdom is vanity. Let us not strive after the vanity of our own wisdom. Let us learn from Solomon that striving after worldly wisdom is like chasing wind. If we caught it, we wouldn't even know what to do with it. It is worthless. It has no value. If you are sitting here this morning and you've realized that you are seeking fulfillment somewhere, then let us look to the very Word of God for answers. Let us make sure that we understand what our purpose for this life is and what God, the Creator of all things, has set in place for us. Because He didn't leave us empty-handed. He knows that we are inquiring minds seeking answers, and He has provided us with the answers that are necessary. We may not learn everything. We may not ultimately achieve what we set out to as far as wisdom is concerned, but God has given us what is necessary. If you have not yet entered into that relationship, then this morning is the time to do so. If you are a part of the Lord's church and you would like to make sure that your life is striving for the very purpose that Solomon is going to eventually conclude to, and that we all should eventually come to that conclusion, then please, let's make that known to us this morning so that we can help as the family that God has put in place for us here in Prescott, Arizona. If you have any need whatsoever, please come while together we stand and while we sing this song of worship.